Few have ever had a more, shall we say, interesting 2 years as the head coach of the 76ers than John Lucas. These mid-90s teams won a mere 24 and 18 games respectively, and Lucas would do all he could to keep a positive vibe.
I remember, you may not remember this, and you probably don't think I would even share this, but remember I called a meeting with you and...
Sean Oleksiak, our producer.
Yeah, and who else did the games with you?
Steve Mix.
Steve Mix. I remember Steve.
That's right.
And I talked about, y'all got to start talking better about our team. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
You said, give us something better. You told me, give us something better to talk about.
Stories? We got a lot more of them with John Lucas next on Fresh 24. Sixers lock all windows and doors. John Harding Lucas Jr. Let me recap here, all right? NBA player and coach, former professional tennis player. You have an extensive program that supports and helps athletes with addiction. And for 2 years of your life, my friend, you were here in Philly in the mid-90s as the vice president and head coach of the 76ers. Now, we're going to talk about all that, but first... For those who haven't seen you in a while, what are you up to?
Well, you know, just finished my 6th year with the Rockets as a coach, assistant coach, first assistant. Probably transitioning to the front office in a form of a vice president's role. And enjoying life, still doing my youth development programs, which actually got started when I was in Philly with a guy named Kobe Bryant.
I've heard of him.
You remember before,
may he rest in peace.
Before you were doing our games and before in the summers, before in the NBA we had all these rules, I used to have the high school players come over and work out. And my daughter and my boys went to, we lived in Lower Merion, right at City Line, Main Line, and they went to Ballard Kenwood and Lower Merion. So my wife told me that she had seen a better basketball player in high school than me. I told her she was nuts.
Wow.
And I kept telling me some kid named Kobe Bean. I said, oh, okay. So after a 5-game losing road trip, which came pretty frequent when I was there.
Yeah, right.
She told me, let's go see this guy play. So I go to the Palestra. They were going to play at the Palestra. I'm going, high school kids for teams play here? I said, yeah. And outside the door was Jelly Bean Bryant. And I run into Joe, and I go, Joe, what are you doing? I said, I'm here to see some little kid my wife swears is a really good basketball player. And I said, why are you here? He said, well, my son plays. I said, what's his name? He said, his name is Kobe Bryant, but they call him Kobe Bean. I said, that's who I'm here to see. And I saw him play, and I'll never forget it. They were playing Chester, a young, aggressive team that pressed. And in that game, Kobe started out at center, and ended up playing the point guard in the final few minutes of the game. So that night, I invited him to come work out with us in the summer. So in that summer, this is really, before we had all these rules, was Kobe, Ricky Mahorn, Dawn Staley, who I helped her get her knees back to go back and play with the Olympics that year with the Dream Team and all of that. And we had Kobe, and then Kobe would work out at 6 a.m. in the mornings with us when we were getting in shape at St. Joe's. Phil Martelli was the coach there.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we kept going, Kobe used to practice. So that year in the draft, I drafted a guy named Jerry Stackhouse with the 3rd pick. Kobe beat everybody that year except Antonio McDice. Mm. So I judged the workouts by the one-on-one with Kobe.
So you're saying he was the best player in that draft except for McDice?
That year, yeah, when he was a junior in high school. And I thought it was very good. So everybody was telling me to get him to go to college, and I would tell everybody he has no desire to go to college.
Well, isn't it true that Kobe—
I would go watch him play at Plymouth high school there. And I would
Plymouth White Marsh.
Watch him play, and he would come work out. And he eventually kept working out. And then when I got fired that summer, at the end of that year, he took our trainer, who was with us, Joe Carbone, with him to Philly. So I would— I'd come from San Antonio, where I was the coach of the Spurs, and we had just lost in the conference finals. And Bob Bass had gone to Charlotte. And I called Bob Bass and said, look, BB, take this kid. Now, if you remember, Kobe went to Charlotte first, and then he was traded for Vlade Divac and somebody else. I can't remember. And then Kobe moved from there on out to Philly, and Jerry West had called me about him, but I didn't think Jerry Knows would be taking him based on where they were. And I thought Kobe would be a great fit for Charlotte. And it all worked out well. But then, even to finish the Kobe story, he goes to the prom that year.
With Brandy.
With a daughter, and he goes with Brandy, but my daughter and her friend were with them the whole weekend. And those pictures that you see with them were taken at my house.
Wow. Hey, so, isn't it true though, Luke, that you had him in a scrimmage, like you said, Rick Mahorn, some of the Sixer players, and he was the best player in the scrimmage?
He was close.
Okay.
He was close. He was right there. I mean, he was still developing, but he was close. You could see he would eventually beat it. If you saw the upside, he would see that, because he went from there to the ABCD camp up there, got the MVP that year. He was getting training three times a day with us, plus playing with his team. His high school coach did a lot for him. And so it was really good to see the growth of that. So I did that in Philly, and it was no rules at that time. Also did it in Cleveland when I coached the Cavaliers with LeBron James, and I got suspended for two games because I let him, but I made the mistake of letting a media guy in there who wrote about the scrimmage. And I was reading something the other day, Mark, that all of the guys that were on my Cleveland teams, Carlos Boozer, Smush Parker, and all of those guys would say, oh, if he was in the league, he'd just be another average player. I don't know, this is out of their mind. See, he was by far. Now, the two of them, Kobe was more skilled at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But LeBron was a physical man and a specimen. But for skill and footwork, Kobe had the edge early. But for just basketball savant, LeBron James was really, really, really good at that age. So, you know, it's been an interesting— although my two teams were about getting the first pick in the drafts, it wasn't about winning at that time. I did get to see two of the best high school players that eventually went with Nike, which I had been a part of. I was Nike's third basketball client. So it was been a big part of me, for me with them and going on.
Luke, let's jump right to 1994. Owner Harold Katz names you the head coach. You're the GM. You're the vice president of basketball operations. And you inherited a struggling team. They were just a couple of years removed from trading Charles Barkley. What stands out for you from your time here in Philly those 2 years?
First of all, my family loved Philadelphia. Absolutely loved Philly. It was a tough time basketball-wise. I think Dana Burrows made the all-star team for us.
You made a lot of money for him. Remember ML Carr? You gave Dana the ball. He averaged 20, hit all those threes, and next thing you know, he signed in a big deal with the Celtics. He should have given you part of that contract.
And then, you know, we drafted Jerry Stackhouse right before the following year. Then they took Iverson. We didn't have the pieces in place at the time. It was going to be a long rebuild. I enjoyed working for Harold Katz. I enjoyed the Philly environment. I didn't get to coach in the new building, but the progression to moving to the new building. But I will share a funny story. The guy who had Novocaine.
Pat Croce.
I was trying to get us a plane. And Pratt did all of the workouts through his units with Novocaine in places. So I had gotten a substantial amount of money from Health South to get us a plane. Hal said, if I raise $1 million, we can get a plane. So I had a couple of sponsors that helped us get a million. But I had to let Pat Croce go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, in a year, Pat Croce came back to be my boss. And so I told Pat, I'm not going to quit. You're going to have to fire me. He said, no problem. Don't worry. But
you know what?
Pat did a good job. They bought in. It was really, really a good. Johnny Davis followed me. But I really enjoyed my time in Philly. It was a struggle. Team-wise, I mean, Ed Pinckney had passed his prime, LaSalle Thompson, Jeff Malone was a holdover from there. We had a lot of those guys have gone on to coach, gone on, Massenburg. All of those guys have gone on. Ed Pinckney is with me in Houston as a scout, and he was far past his prime, played at Villanova. Perry.
Tim Perry.
A guy that couldn't make our team, that should have made our team, was a guy named Ricky Brunson. Played it.
Oh, Tim. Yeah. Sure.
And Ricky should have been on our team. He didn't, and he played well. But Leon Rose was there at the time, and that was his first
client,
Jalen Brunson. We had.
I'd say Jalen's the son, but go ahead.
I told Derek Austin, who was used to coach with New York. He's in my gym still trying to get another coaching job today. So those relationships have stuck for a long time. I did hear from Dana Burrows, and I hadn't heard from Dana Burrows forever, and he's doing good. But Dana was as efficient score, if you remember, that we had in a high pick and roll. Sharon Wright had a serious injury.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sean Bradley, who was there. And so we were a ways away. We were young. We were kind of like where the Rockets were once James left to go to Philly and we lost Russ. It was almost a rebuild and a total rebuild. And you can't do that in 2 years. And then Harl sold the team.
So, Luke,
I remember when Harl bought the team and he got it for, very low dollars now. And
like 12, 13 million.
A lot of money at the time, which would be little dollars now. And it's one thing that I've always remember about our league. And I tell kids today with my youth program, and I have a grassroots program called JL3 Elite, named after my kids, that it's only going to get bigger, Mark.
Mm.
Now, the game has changed.
Yes, it has.
Coach doesn't have the power that he once had. Analytics and math.
Luke, let me stop you. Let me stop you because I do want to talk about the state of the game today, but I want to concentrate on your time in Philly.
Okay.
I always thought about you, and this is something I actually admired, that you were a saver of souls because of your own problems with addiction. So players like Lloyd Daniels, a playground guy, never really got a shot. Richard Dumas, who unfortunately had major issues with addiction. You signed those guys. Were you trying to save souls and win? I mean, what was your reasoning for doing that?
I get falsely accused of that because of my own recovery. If you know, Lloyd Daniels had played for me in San Antonio when we went to the conference finals. We had Vernon Maxwell, who was probably the best we could get free agency with the money at the time, who had just come off a championship. In hindsight, I would think that today, although those guys didn't give me any real issues, B.J. Tyler was who Harl and Gene Shue at the time felt we were going to take in the draft anyway. So I didn't.
Wait, I got to stop you. You did something with B.J. Tyler I had not seen in more than 40 years covering the NBA. Do you remember what that was? We were at the Spectrum. It was during a timeout huddle. You sent him. You threw your own player out of the game. What happened there?
A bit of a difference.
I'll say.
A bit of a difference, not listening. You know, this year I coached the game, Mark, and I don't mean to jump from Philly, but I coached the game and got a technical in the Detroit game because Coach Silas was gone with the death of his father. I got a technical because a guy on my team overthrew a guy wide open, and I walked out on the court to get him, and they gave me a technical. My team thought I had lost my mind. I just, you know, the purity of the game of basketball is really important to me. I don't do this for the love of money. I didn't never have. It's been about the having the purity of the game. And I always used to teach John and my oldest son, Jay, who coaches at Duke now, and John is in Phoenix. Don't ever disrespect this game. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. if you disrespect the game, and for me as a coach, I you know, for one, being a black coach, that I cannot let it be perceived that I didn't have control of my team. And so that, but what he did, murdered that. And BJ, I think I felt more comfortable with that because BJ had to spend time with me through the summers when he was, before he got to Philly. So although we were taking BJ, and because of what other things I was involved in on off the court issues, I knew a lot about him. So I felt comfortable with him. I probably wouldn't have done that to Rex Walters. Because I don't know Rex, but Rex would have never done that.
You, as you recounted, you drafted Jerry Stackhouse, and he's become a good coach. He led a G League team to their title. He's seemingly has turned around Vanderbilt. Did you think that he would be a coach when you coached him back in the day?
Yes. Jerry has really matured, lost a lot of aggressiveness like I have as to become a coach, and he's done a great job. We maintained our relationship from that point. He and I had our issues in Philly of the way we were going to play. Although he was the third pick, he wasn't going to shoot up all the balls, and he had to play within the framework of what we were doing. And so, yeah, it was really good. And I thought that he would be who he is today. You know, he's from my hometown in Durham. Mm-hmm. So my relationship, a lot of times, Mark, in this league, even today, goes much, much more deeper than a player-coach relationship.
And you have that with him, you think?
I did. In fact, mm-hmm. his relatives live next door to my relatives in Kinston, North Carolina.
How about that?
So I knew what I was getting at the time, and I knew from Phil Ford at Carolina and Dean Smith what the kind of player I was going to get. A guy that I really, really wanted, and I don't think it was the same year, but he came out, was Rasheed Wallace.
He was pretty good.
You remember, he was living in Philly. He had one of the absolute best workouts. Mm. That I had ever seen.
I think he went fourth. I think he went fourth.
Yes.
He ended up going fourth. You were
he
big
didn't want to
on.
Come to Philly.
Well, yeah.
I really felt at that time in his life it wasn't going to be the best fit for him.
Right.
And you know, sometimes at that time, our owner, the perception of who we were, we sometimes got a bad rap.
Luke, you were big on making everyone on the team family, and that included me. And I remember once I came to a shoot around and I was hobnobbing with the players. And when it was came time to look at video beforehand, you said, "Zumoff, you stay." And you kept me in there with the players watching video. Why did you do that?
Coming out of San Antonio, we were the only pro team in a small market. So the more you talked about our team, the better it would be. For you, I got from Bill Fitch when I was recovering off of my drugs and alcohol with his teams before they suspended me. He would make me come to his room after the games and sit up to about 5 or 6 in the morning watching video, and he would call the announcers and criticize them. Like at 3 o'clock, he'd wake them up to go through this part of the film. So I thought, I'm going to have some fun with Mark. He's always talking about what we're doing, what we're doing. Let's let him have sit in and see the videos and see what we're doing. And try. I remember, you may not remember this, and you probably don't think I would even share this, but remember I called a meeting with you and
Sean Oleksiak, our producer.
Yeah, and who else did the games with you
there? Steve Mix.
Steve Mix. I remember Steve.
That's right.
And I talked about, y'all got to start talking better about our team. You remember that?
You remember? Oh, yeah.
You said, give us something better. You told me, give us something better to talk about. We were in Philly that day. The guys were on me about, Coach, they talk so bad about us. And I said, well, you know, we're not very good, but I'm going to have a conversation with them. And you guys, you came back, you said, you looked me square in the face and said, well, give us something better to talk about.
Luke, tell me about John Lucas Enterprises.
I've maintained it for the last couple. It used to be a group of camps for 4th, 5th, and 6th grades, all the way up to the pros with training. And then I went back to coach with the Rockets. So the camps have kind of maintained their presence, but not with the attention that they did before I went back to coach. And John Lucas Enterprises also has John Lucas Foundation, where we raise money for the biggest part of John Lucas Enterprises, which is drug rehabilitation help. And we go from either injuries to marijuana to drugs. And before the league and before states legalized marijuana in certain states, it was banned out of our game. So now we can't ban marijuana because it's legal in certain NBA states. So we have to try to provide kind of adequate treatment. So it kind of changed. And if you remember, you probably don't remember this, but in 86, when I was suspended, I had to come back. We didn't have any rules in place. So through David Stern and myself and my own staying sober, we developed the 3-strike policies that we have. And now I help with baseball, football, basketball, and hockey, all the policies for our term now mental health that we're using. So for me, I'm 37 years sober. And so for me, I always use that to be a part of what I do, because I'm always trying to be what I call the how of life, honest, an open mind, and a willingness to change.
So one thing I know you've always been willing to share is your own story. Do that for those who are listening and watching now, what life was like for you as an addict.
As an addict?
Yes.
I would go to shoot-arounds and then miss the games.
And go because?
And go because, to state. Okay. Get high, and then become very, very paranoid. Mm-hmm. And then once I admitted to having a problem, Mark, in 1980, I just publicly admitted. I think the writer at the time was David Dupree. I was with the Washington Bullets before they became the Wizards. And I just said, yeah, I'm having a drug problem. I thought that meant leave me alone.
But isn't it true, Luke, and isn't it true, and this was published, that you one night were out all night and you literally woke up in the middle of the street or along the curb, is that right? And you had a moment of clarity then?
I was called a blackout, and I had 5 pairs of basketball socks on with no shoes, with urination in the middle of the street downtown Houston trying not to be recognized. That was probably my lowest moment. And then when Bill Fitch cut me, he saved my life. Because I had finally gotten to the point where I had had enough. And it took me 6 years to get to that point once I gotten into an addiction. So sometimes people say, you know, you're full of second chances. I don't think anybody should be thrown away. But I know I've seen the devil. So I know what that is, and only 1 out of 10 of us come back from that. So for me, my life is still dedicated to my recovery, because without it, I don't have anything.
You
and
we have
lost
been quoted
a lot of people. I was just reading about the football player Haskins, the his story that's coming out now. No, but for the grace of God, that could have been me. And so, and what used to be a peer to others is funny. That mental health, and I'm including an addiction in mental health, is life threatening.
A quote from you is as follows: "What I thought was the worst possible deal in life turned out to be the best gift I've been given. My addiction carried me past my sports life. It gave me my best trophy. It gave me John Lucas. It gave me life." That sports life you refer to, the fact that you rarely failed as a developing athlete, you think that was not good for you, correct?
I think that what you see happening now in sports happened to me. And I always talk about it to athletes when they get to be 32, 33. They see the end coming and they don't know what they want to do. I have my master's degree. I was valedictorian of my high school. Both of my parents were educators. I didn't come from a broken family. I had everything I ever wanted. But once I got to the pros, I got like, now what? I stopped growing as a person. I grew as a basketball player, but I didn't grow as a person. So when there's probes in your life, I call it three P's. Like when you're 18 to 35, you probe, you make mistakes, you do things. And that was my best at playing basketball. I was probing. Then I got to be retired or seeing the end. I'm like, now what? And then I got to play against all my idols, all my heroes. I got to do all that. Now what? And so now I'm at 35, and now I don't know. I know basketball was what I did, but it was also who I was. So once I got sober, I had to go back, and it was a born-again moment for me. I had to go back and find myself. And that gift of finding me gave me a new freedom. And getting that new freedom gave me a chance to, once I embrace this scar on my face called recovery, I begin to grow. So I would share my experience, strength, and hope. And as long as I didn't drink, I was just as good as Mark Zimhoff. But if I ever take that first drink, I lose all of me. And so for me, that gave me something. So I started counting one day at a time and building up one day at a time. And I treated my recovery like my basketball. Even to this day, Mark, and I have nowhere to go, I'd have to be at work. I'm up at 6:30. I go to my meeting, which is my AA meeting. I start my day. I make my bed. I do all of those simple things that I could probably have other people do, because it makes me become responsible for me.
Luke, you were a great tennis player as well. Just a couple of tennis questions here. Is it true that you...
You got all my history.
I don't play, Luke. You know that. You should. Well, exactly. Is it true that you partnered once in doubles with Philly's own Vic Satius, who, by the way, is turning 100 years old?
I was a nervous wreck playing doubles with Vic Satius.
How did that even happen?
At the Marion Racquet Club.
Oh, wow. How did that even happen?
How do you get that story? I don't tell that story to many people. So, like, it was unbelievable. I was on the Junior Davis Cup team. And my Junior Davis Cup team was Jimmy Connors, Raul Ramirez, and some other guys. We had a really good Brian teacher. Really good. But we were on our way to the U.S. Open, and the stop before was the Lower Marion Country Club stop. And so I played. I would have been a really good tennis player, but back when I grew up, a lot of the racism that was there growing up, and the biggest thing that got me out of tennis was I liked the concept in basketball, we got beat. In tennis, I got beat. That did not feel good that I got beat. But playing with Vic Satius, I was a nervous wreck. and I had to hit every ball. They just played me the whole time. And so that was like, you know, another thing about my tennis, you know who my doubles partner was?
Well, I'm going to get to the Rene Richards story. That's what that's what we're talking about here, world team tennis. So just let me give a little background. This happened in the 70s, and Rene was one of the first ever transgender athletes, male to female. So this is a very hot topic now. So I want to ask you, what's your view on men who have surgery to become females and want to compete as females?
I don't have a view. I have a respect for who they are, but I don't have a view because the way Rene was treated with her sex change, I was there at the very, very beginning, and we would travel and people would look like they've seen a ghost. She was 6'3". She had a 13 shoe. I used to give her estrogen shots. I used to tease her, no way, Rene. So I don't have a view for that. I just have a healthy respect for people should be who they are. Now, if I talk from a spiritual standpoint or a Bible, I've got different views, but I don't have a view either way. That's the best way I can answer that.
The NBA game today, it's obviously has changed since when you played in the 80s and 90s and even when you coached. What are your thoughts of the game today, the skill level, the players, their willingness to be coached? You know, a lot of these guys, they come in, some of them are entitled. What is your feeling on that?
Our game is much younger now. So when you're drafting, you're not drafting to make your team better. You're drafting to get a guy that can help you down the road or to find out whether he can play or not without spending big money on him. So like every year there's a new draft. Like half of the people who get drafted this year won't be in the league the next year or the following. But when we came out, in the early 90s, you were going to get a sophomore, a junior, or a senior coming out of college who could probably help you and be where some of these guys are 3 years ago. So like now, we have a kid on our team, a guy that would be like Jalen Green. He'd be like in his third year. He would be coming into the league now. He'd be really ready to play instead of us having to lose and coaches lose their jobs and because you're forced to play them at a young age, which makes our game younger. Then that's one piece of it. The next piece is the new owners of the league are hedge fund owners or people who don't know the league, but they know math of the league. So everything is analytics. Well, a 9-paint 2 is a tougher shot to make than a corner 3 or a 3, because if I make 3 9-paint 2s and 4 3s, I'm up in the game. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't I take more of those? More possessions per possession for the game. The game is no inside players. It's all keeping spacing and spreading the floor. So the game has a heavy European influence, a heavy youth influence, and a heavy analytic influence. And not a lot of fundamental influence until it gets later. And if you notice, all the teams that win, as we've always known, are your veteran teams. So those that have the most age, like Denver won this year, they've been together 4 or 5 years, nice mixture of veterans. It's not guys coming out who didn't even win in high school or AAU. And we were talking about winning the highest game level and how to compete against grown men. Can't happen. So you're either going to play them that way so they develop, so they'll be really good for the third coach, or you do it in a sense that you do a method where you try to gain assets, develop them, and move pieces in development to keep gaining assets to hopefully get good and have that wonder. And if you get that Joel Embiid, the James Hardens, the Steph Curry's, or those guys, and you get yourself a 10-year run to hopefully do that, then that's what happens. But the league has changed in that regard. And the other thing that it's done is, like I tell the guys all the time, we never knew anything about load management. We played back to back to back. You got to tell me, you can only play, so I got to take a day rest. What are you talking about? The guys in my locker room, Charles, since he's a Philly guy, Charles was talking on TV, and Kenny Smith was on with him and didn't even realize this. He was that we did used to wash our uniforms in the shower because mm-hmm. we would play back to back to back games. And that exactly. he felt like, and so you remember the bubble?
Absolutely, of course. It was just
the
a few years ago.
Guys were going to leave the bubble. I don't know if you remember this. And I jumped their asses at a meeting about how far this league had come. I said, the commissioner's got all of this on the floor. Black Lives Matter. All of these things going on there. And y'all are trying to leave because we were down there for 3 months, right? So now all of a sudden everybody wants to leave. And I told them, if you're leaving, you better be going to Kenosha or you better be going to Port. If you're leaving to be leaving, I played in this league where the per diem was $24 a day. The minimum, I was the number one pick in the draft, and the salary, my whole contract was $1.5 million. Mm. You guys are making that with the 15th guy. And we're going to jeopardize that all because you're a little uncomfortable down here?
Luke, listen, you promised me a half hour. I've gone over. There are so many more lies to tell.
No.
Will you come back? will you come back and do it again?
Absolutely, Mark. I didn't know it was that quick, but thank you so much for having
me on.
And it is, look, I'm telling you, it is really good to see you, man. My Philly days, although I didn't get the results that I wanted, that was a quality group of people being around. And I get real tickled all the time because Gene Shue coached me in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was the first to tell me about pickleball.
And oh, wow.
Now pickleball, remember he was always talking about pickleball, and it has become one of the biggest craze. And every time I go to Philly, it's two people I see. Sonny Hill
mm-hmm.
and World Be Free.
Oh, yeah.
They come out every time to say hello or to be, and then Alan Lumpkin.
Yes.
And he's still
been with the team longer than anybody.
He is still with the Sixers.
Still.
And guess who else worked with us there?
Tell me.
Dirk Lively's mother.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
And she worked
Kathy Drysdale. Kathy Drysdale.
Yes. And now he played for my son, Jay, who's an assistant.
Isn't that something? Isn't that something? He's going to be quite a player.
I think he's going to be a very good player.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Luke, nothing but love for you, my friend. You take care of yourself. We'll have you back
soon.
We
miss you in the game of basketball.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Check out our friends over at Philadelphia Sports Nation, a local Philadelphia sports site covering your favorite teams across blogs and social media. PHLSportsNation.com. Philadelphia Sports Nation. PHL Sports Nation. Enhancing your Philadelphia sports fan experience. Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode of Fresh 24. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts.